ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, November 11th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins. As always, it's Remembrance Day in Canada. It's Veterans Day in the United States. Lest we forget, this year, Dwayne, it's a little special because there was one veteran that I was close to that passed away in the last year. So, Fred Modden, this one's for you.
Fair enough. It's actually the 11th hour as we tip this one off. So, literally, we are X amount of years. What is it? 1919 that it ended. So, 100 years. Wow. Is it 100 years ago? That's insane. World War One, you recognize it with the poppies and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah, we're here to talk about soccer because that's one of the freedoms and the privileges that we have to talk about because of the sacrifices that were made back in the day.
Yes. Let's talk about soccer. Soccer Today, big weekend in the world of soccer. And for me, it was quite a fun day, an exciting day, because I'm a bit of a neutral in yesterday's action in both Man City, Liverpool, but especially MLS Cup. It was a game that was a bit cagey at the beginning, and then it unfolded around the 55th to the 60th minute. We did a post-game show yesterday, so if you want to hear my thought and Tristan's thought, I suggest you go watch that show or listen to it this show after. But Dwayne, what are your thoughts globally about last night's or yesterday's afternoon's game?
I'm actually, even though it did work out for Seattle in the end, I'm actually still confused by their choice to allow TFC to have so much of the ball, particularly in the first half. Obviously, they felt that if they shut them down, they would get their moments, and they did, obviously. I mean, that first goal with the deflection off Moro was more than a little bit lucky. And once that happened, the game changed at that point. TFC didn't have enough to chase back. They were looking, obviously, to get that one goal, possibly from the guy that got it late in the game. But by that time, of course, it didn't matter. Look, I think we all understood going into the game that the talent difference was in Seattle's favor, and obviously at home advantage into that, that it would take a very strong performance by TFC to get it done. And you know, I remember talking about TFC back in July and before that when we said, you know, they can't have it both ways. They're either good in the back or they're good in the front, but they can't be good at both. And during the undefeated streak, which of course ended yesterday, they sort of figured that out, but never completely. They did have to sacrifice a little bit of their attacking power that they had early in the season to make it a little bit more solid at the back. Yesterday, what happened was that they just didn't have enough bite in the final third, and in the end, that was more than enough to not be enough.
We saw Seattle. You mentioned the first goal, Leardom. It was given to Leardom after all. It wasn't considered an own goal, but the run of the play, it was the first time Seattle scored on the run of play against Toronto in MLS Cup history after three games. And there was a few of them. And we saw Victor Rodriguez being a really important part of the midfield of Seattle late in the second half. But one part of Toronto FC that surprised me yesterday, Dwayne, is Omar Gonzalez's play. We all knew he wasn't 100%. Was it too much of a gamble for Greg Vanney? And now it's easy to say on Monday morning, playing Monday morning manager. I know. But when we look at Omar Gonzalez's responsibilities, either on the run of play leading up to the first goal or clearly involved in the second one also, and his missed opportunities on set plays too, which if fully fit Omar Gonzalez will be on top of those aerial balls in the corners, what were your thoughts when you saw Omar Gonzalez struggle in the first part of this game?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We had the debate. We were talking a lot about Josie, obviously, in the lead up to this game in terms of whether, I mean, I asked Charles directly whether it would be the right idea to even play him, even if he was ready a little bit. And we didn't talk about Gonzalez in the same way. And part of that is because we don't trust Simon in the same way. But that said, Simon had a decent playoff in the lead up to this game. And maybe it would have made sense to keep things the exact same way that they were going in. look, TFC's biggest weakness all year and even in the playoffs was that they don't have the ability at the back to keep up with pacier teams. And Seattle certainly was, and I felt this going in, that that was one of the biggest challenges of this game. That, you know, I almost think, as weird as this sounds, I almost think that TFC would have had a better chance against LAFC. I think the matchup was a little bit, was poor for TFC because Seattle's strength was so much of getting on that front foot, particularly on the counter. And, you know, Gonzalez was a great addition for TFC. You remember back, you know, again, let's go back to the first half of the season. Well, I mean, when I say the first half of the season, you've got to eliminate the first four games or five games when TFC was very good. And then the next, whatever, 12 or whatever that they played there where they were very bad.
And you're talking about the eight game in general where there was the eight game winless streak with Greg Vanney, which was his worst in career since managing Toronto. That spell in May-June type of the time.
Yeah, you look at that and you know what Gonzalez did when he came in is he stabilized that and allowed them to get on that roll in August, where again they, you know, we've talked to this, you know, ad nauseum at this point, but they weren't losing, they weren't winning a ton either, but they weren't losing, and that was the difference in a lot of ways was his ability to stabilize things, but that still didn't take on that issue, and he was exposed with his lack of foot speed. You know, Gonzalez is a great player in the air. He's a great MLS defender in a lot of ways, but he's not swift of foot. So TFC, one of the things they need to do in the offseason, they need to address that. They need to address that probably in the midfield a little bit. They need to stop that to not expose them so much at the back so that you're not getting into one-on-one battles where you know, your slower players will get burned That's just kind of what happened. I'm not even going to throw him under the bus by any means, because as I said,
no. And if he's injured, it's not necessarily his fault as well, right? Right? And It's the person who puts him in this position. And I was talking to Tristan after the game yesterday. We were so pumped about this game that we're still talking about. You know, when you're not 100% and you just come in late in the game, you don't have time to be exposed of your weakness due to your injury to your opposition. But this way, be starting a match in a highly anticipated and very watched environment where the players will look at everything they can to get a small advantage. If they see you moving a bit more awkwardly than before, they'll notice, oh, maybe if I go to his left, he doesn't seem to be 100%. Maybe he has something to do with his left part of his body and I can bypass him. It's a crude analogy, it's a crude way to look at it, but it's as simple as sometimes it's that single advantage that will make a big difference. And we've seen the times that Toronto were beat on the counter, it was that. But let's speak about the counter. You mentioned you were bewildered by the tactics of Brian Schmetzer in the first half, literally letting Toronto have 65% of the possession and wanting to break them on the counter basically was, I guess, the tactic. At the end of the day, it worked, but it did leave a lot of people wondering what was going on.
No, exactly. And like I said, their first goal, it's lucky. It just is. There's no other way to put it. Like, I mean, it deflects and goes in. Like, they didn't call an own goal? Come on, man. That's an own goal. Like, you know, if it's any other game, it probably is called that way.
I think it's literally because of the rule of the law in Major League Soccer. If the shot is directed on target, so I guess it was viewed as on target. That's the only explanation.
Yeah, I mean, look, the point I'm making, that doesn't go in, and TFC's still in that. Well, once they're chasing the game, it's a lot different, and certainly once they allowed that goal, there was not a lot of, it didn't seem like TFC was going to get a chance. And I remember having a conversation with the people I was out with, where we talked about that. It's like, yeah, TFC had a lot of the ball, but they didn't have a lot of clear chances. Seattle was defending quite well. That said, had it remained 0-0 into the 75th, 80th, 90th minute, I'm giving Toronto a chance in there. So
then Josie comes on and gets the goal, and you see, right? That was a scenario for Toronto. Keep it close or tight until Josie can come on. And because you were trailing, Toronto had to put Josie on at the 65th minute. And we'll get to Josie in a second, because an interesting aspect of how he actually got ready for this game and went on, that was quite telling of his healthy or not status. But Seattle, they did win. And to me, the best way to explain how they played, Dwayne, is like they decided to play that like they had the lead, even though they didn't for the first 65 minutes. And that is interesting, but it worked for Brian Schmetzer. And I guess we have to give him a lot of the credit for the success of Seattle this year.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, I think that that's probably going to disappoint a few people. Some other neutral observers would be disappointed in the fact that Seattle didn't put the front foot down. But I suppose that they felt that if they did that, that they had a chance to let Toronto get that lead. And then they're really in trouble if Toronto could pack it in that way. Right. So it did work. It's not the approach that I think I would have taken, but nonetheless, it worked. And I think that the reason it worked was because the talent difference was just a little bit more. And that, you know, if Josie's healthy, the talent difference in those two teams is not as big as it was yesterday, but he clearly isn't. And, you know, that said, what we saw, what happened? He came in and what happened, man? Like, it's
nothing,
you know,
for a long time, and then he scored later on. And
which is Josie.
Yes, which is Josie. But his level, his fitness level, 35 days ago, he had a quad injury, which is probably a lot more severe than we were led to believe. That is probably a fact. And then at around the 64th minute, Luke Wildman and Stephen Caldwell on TSN here in Canada, Dwayne, mentioned, no, Josie's still on the bench, no warm-up yet, he hasn't been warmed up at all, no movement at all on the Josie aspect. 65th minute, look at the bench, he's putting a jersey on. 66th minute, he's coming onto the pitch. When did he actually warm up?
He probably didn't, because they felt that he couldn't, I think probably the thinking with Josie is that he had just enough to get himself in a scoring position and get a shot on goal. And if he could do that, then he had the ability to find the back of the net. But he didn't have a lot of his mobility to allow him to find the spaces that he might have had he been totally healthy. You know, woulda, coulda, shoulda when it comes to Toronto in terms of their ability to win this. But, if it's not MLS Cup, clearly he's sitting out a couple more weeks, right? Now he's got a long 3 months to recover that thing.
Josie's not playing like against Canada on the 15th, I guess. That's
Ross
for sure.
Already out, so yeah, he's not on it.
And he's not playing against Cuba, and he's not playing until next year. For sure, I believe. And that's going to be interesting. Speaking of next year, we'll talk in a minute about already the trade window about to open, and general managers, technical directors, sporting directors across Major League Soccer already having to take hard decisions. In some cases, the decisions have been made a long time ago, but we'll see them executed later today and in the coming few days. Just quick word on the MLS Cup champions once again. Seattle Sounders 3-1. Jordan Morris, Brad Smith, Victor Rodriguez were important pieces in this victory, Dwayne, in my opinion. Of course, Lodero and Rui Diaz were the name most touted and talked about. And we know Lodero, how important he is for the midfield of Seattle. And we know how Rui Diaz has helped the scoring of the Sounders, which was a problem over the last couple of years, even though that defensively they played well in the playoffs. But Victor Rodriguez is the type of player that I think Toronto needs as well in the future. Maybe it's easy to say every team needs a Victor Rodriguez, but when we look at the depth chart of Toronto FC in the attacking role, a Jordan Hamilton never really was replaced or had a better option than him on the bench. Josie Altidore, we all know his injury status over the last few years, unfortunately. That's what it was missing at the end of the day. Another target man. And I go back to the comments of Greg Vanney at halftime saying, well, we have to try to find a way to break down through the midfield, through the middle of our attack. Because right now, even if we want to cross it in, we don't have a target. We don't have a big body to give the ball to. To me, that's really telling when you look at Toronto FC. And Dwayne, that's what I said last night. Toronto FC made it to MLS Cup despite a tumultuous year. This is not a project. This is not a team that was built with an identity and a end goal in mind. This is a project of two minds. This is Tim Bezpečenko, the rest of Tim Bezpečenko, and the beginning of Ali Curtis and the reactionary aspect of the Pozuelo deal. So maybe this is a good result for a team that was never meant to be where it was yesterday.
You know, first off, in Seattle, like, I mean, two championships in 4 years, in the playoffs every year of their existence, are inarguably the most consistent team in Major League Soccer over the last decade. Absolutely full measure. They are deserving champions. You know, put aside all your talk about LAFC and all that sort of stuff. The Seattle Sounders are absolutely deserving 2019 champions and were the better team on the day. You know, just tactics, nitpicking here. Like, who cares? They got the win. That's what matters. In terms of Toronto, Kevin, it's, yeah, like, as a TFC observer, you have to look at this and go, this was an unexpected moment for them. And it's a testament, I think, to their veteran players and their sort of mental strength. We talked about that yesterday, how mentally strong this team was. And I think that they deserve a lot of credit for being able to battle through and get themselves to an MLS Cup final and get themselves within 90 minutes and, you know, one bounce here or there from winning a championship. Because you're right, this is not a completed project at all. In fact, you look at, you know, last January when everything started to go crazy in TFC land. The idea back then that they would somehow piece together a team that could get themselves back to MLS Cup final was absurd. I think that, you know, as disappointed as you are today, if you're a TFC fan, you have to look at this team and say, yeah, this is absolutely incomplete right now. This was a transition year in a lot of ways. They got to figure Bradley out. Obviously, he didn't get the contract extension yesterday, so they have a decision, which is probably for the best if you want to really think about it.
MLSC's accountant is really happy this morning. He's like, okay, good, good. My bonus will be intact. It's not all going to go to Michael Bradley.
Yeah, exactly. It's yeah, they have some money to spend then, you know, but if they can get Bradley off of a DP contract, and I think he wants to stay in Toronto, so I think that's workable for them, then great. If he doesn't want to do that, and if there is another team in Major League Soccer willing to pay him DP money, then I think TFC is, as sad as it will be, moves on. And you know, they got Liam Fraser there that can probably step in and do 80% of what he did and at a much lower salary, and they can spend that money elsewhere on the pitch, which I think then would really benefit this team moving forward. I absolutely think the TFC is now set up to actually do a build now and perhaps get back to a game like this in the days ahead. It still probably stings a little bit today, because anytime you get to a championship final, you understand how much sort of fortune that goes into any run like that. And you know, whenever you get 90 minutes away from winning a championship, you kind of want to win it because you never know, right?
The
But
cliche of maybe we'll never get there for the rest of our career is true, because most of the time you don't. It's actually a rarity that you go back to the championship game.
yeah, I mean, look. Like, you play these playoffs 10 times, and this is the only time this ends like this, right? It's TFC was, I that lucky is a really kind of has a negative connotation to it. They were fortunate though at times through these playoffs, and they put themselves in the position to be fortunate. But I do think that they have set themselves up now. Ali Curtis has the opportunity to actually do a build, because they really didn't in the offseason. It was reactionary in the offseason. They made reactionary moves. They can now make planned moves to actually add to the pieces that are there so that they can perhaps move forward. You can't be angry if you're a TFC fan. I mean, you can be sad, you can be frustrated, you can be upset that it didn't happen. Sure, you know, the moment it's sports and all that sort of stuff, but logically, you can't actually be upset about this season. They made MLS Cup final after Sebastian Giovinco and Victor Vazquez left within 2 weeks of each other in the offseason. That's an accomplishment and a half. Have you?
With the new GM just coming into work to Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Which no contact in the no networks of contact in the market, and yeah, so it's a fascinating
Yeah.
aspect of it.
I think they had Pozuelo targeted. And but they had to speed that up, and we all saw the pressure points they put on to get Pozuelo in March. Like, I mean, they kind of burned some bridges to do that, to be honest. And maybe they shouldn't go back to Belgium for a while, but
Maybe, yeah.
nonetheless.
Well, it will be fascinating. And now, looking at overall these playoffs, Dwayne, it's first year of the new format, the accelerated format, I would call it. One game, go home, or continue. So you go on or you go home. And what do you think about this format with hindsight, looking at the speed of it, the quickness of it, and overall the playoffs in 2019?
I think it works. I mean, honestly, is it a format that is set up to absolutely give the better teams as much chance as possible to win? No. But I think within the context of what they're trying to accomplish from an entertainment product, it is the right approach to go. It's unfortunate. The only thing that I wish they could remove from it, and I don't know how they do this, is to actually eliminate that break until the start of the playoffs, because there was quite a long stretch there with that October international break. But it's the reality of it. They're ending their season in October and November, which there's two international breaks in them. They have to figure that out. That's the only thing I would change if I could, but I do think it works, and I doubt they're going to move away from it. It's quick, it's interesting, it rewards the home teams. I mean, you look at, you know, Toronto was the exception,
yeah,
in the sense that they, and even that, they were the fourth seed, not the seventh or something, right? So it's
they still have one home game, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it is rewarding the home teams a little bit more. Other than that, you know, we didn't have the one versus one, but we did have the better teams mostly go through, particularly in that first round, which I think is when it really matters.
Yeah.
If upsets happen in that, you know, 2-3 matchup or a 1-4 matchup, it's not as big of an upset as a 1-7, you know, or 2-7, pardon me.
Yeah, because then it really gives the opinion or the optics that your regular season is kind of like meaningless if your number 7 team can just come in and beat your number 1 team. Otherwise, it makes your league close, right? There's a difference between the two.
Yeah, I mean, you play this format 10 years, and sure, you're going to get a 7-2 upset in there at one point, but by and large, this is set up to reward the home teams. You know, look, I look at, again, like, let's just talk about LAFC for a second here. If they have two legs against Seattle, they probably approached, first off, they're starting in Seattle, and things are probably approached a little bit differently, and maybe it's a different result, because a two-leg playoff is a little bit different than a single knockout. But I don't really care when it comes to that. Like, if you're good enough to win the championship, you should be good enough to win those games. And, you know, as far as the LAFC legacy questions go, yeah, they were brilliant this year, but at the same time, we were talking about how they weren't playing as well down the stretch as they were all season going into the playoffs. So to me, it wasn't that huge of an upset. In fact, we kind of called it as a potential upset in the lead up to it.
We most of careful observers of Major League Soccer, I should say, had not picked Seattle to win MLS Cup. Had not picked LAFC. We had either like New York, NYCFC, a lot of people had a Seattle. It turned out that it was the case. But looking at overall playoffs as well, I do think that it still lived up to the trope of Major League Soccer, that what you need to do is start to get hot towards the end of the season, and that momentum carries on into the playoffs. So I guess this playoff format really fits Major League Soccer, because the trope of Major League Soccer, a team that wants to win needing to be hot at the right time and continue to do so, was actually true with both finalists in this case.
Well, yeah, you know, TFC 13 games without a loss, as we said heading into, Seattle's been consistent all year for sure. It does play to that. Look, yeah, it's very much a league of you know, strength at the end versus strength at the beginning. But I do think the new format actually adds to that and insists that you also have put yourself in a position that your hot streak at the end will let you get a 1-2-3 seed, kind of, rather than even TFC coming from 4 is really tough, because they had to play the two road games in a row to get there, right? Like, that's, I don't think you're going to see many 4 seeds get to an MLS Cup moving forward, but so it's perfect in a lot of ways if you're going to have that. I mean, I know there's a lot of people that hate playoffs out there, but if you're going to have one, this is the way to go in my mind. It was highly entertaining. That's really the purpose of it. I mean, MLS is an entertainment league. It's an entertainment product. That was an entertaining thing. And it's understandable. It's digestible. No one's explaining away goal rules to anyone. Getting rid of the away goals, actually, this is the one thing I'll say about it, is it's illustrated to me how asinine the away goal rule is, because it doesn't do what it's intended to do. The whole idea was to get teams to play a little more open on the road, but instead all I did is have home teams in the first legs play less open,
yeah,
and has caused, like, kind of really dull ties, and, you know, it's rare. Like, I mean, TFC Montreal in 2016 is a glaring
it's an outlier.
It's
a very big outlier. And on that note, the season's over. Major League Soccer season's over, but it's gonna, the turnaround is quick. The turnaround to reality, the reality check comes quick for some players. Tonight at midnight, I believe, or tomorrow. I think it's tonight. I'm pretty sure it's tonight. Actually, it is tonight. At midnight, trade window opens. We'll see who gets traded, who Nashville got. There's a couple of trades, apparently, already in the works for a little while, and we'll see if they're announced tonight, tomorrow, and we'll talk about it more tomorrow. Of course, it's an abbreviated week here on Soccer Today. Devin and I take our yearly break after Major League Soccer, this final game. We're going to take a week off or so, about 10 days. We'll be back around the 22nd, 23rd, depending on the roads. I'll be back from a trip to Nova Scotia. So my Halifax and Wanderers friends, I'll be in your neck of the woods soon. But Dwayne, looking at also the big weekend, Man City, Liverpool, there was also a great event for the Canadian Premier League in Montreal, the U Sports Canadian Championship. The Patriots of Trois-Rivières, UQTR, University of Quebec of Three Rivers, beat Montreal in the final. But Saturday, I had the chance to sit down with Commissioner of the Canadian Premier League, David Clenican, for a very interesting chat that you can listen to if you are a Patreon on our Patreon page for $2 a month, a 20-minute conversation, no holds barred, questions, an open conversation with the Commissioner. That was really fun to do on Saturday night, Dwayne.
No, for sure. I mean, obviously, it was an interesting year for the CanPL and Trois-Rivières winning the eSport Championship in an all-Quebec final. As I said yesterday, sort of in, you know, we had a show yesterday, folks, if you haven't listened to it yet. It's really tells me that there's a lot of talent in the province of Quebec that might get overlooked, and hopefully that the CanPL teams are looking at that moving forward. But certainly $2 a month or more, you can have an opportunity to listen to bonus shows like the interview with the commissioner, and there will be a lot more of those in the days ahead. So yeah, it really isn't a lot of money, and it helps us a lot. It covers our expenses. It allows us to do this daily, and sometimes, you know, this week it was more than daily. Yeah. Well, literally daily. When we say daily, of course, we mean Friday. But it helps us a lot. So if you can afford it, give us a little bit of a, you know, throw us a toonie our way.
And on November 19th, the new slate of Patreon tiers will be unveiled with all your bonus content. Great project that I, Dwayne, and I, and other collaborators of the network are working on to deliver to you starting November 19th will be the announcement. We'll have a special offer a couple of weeks, and we'll bring you great contents. But before we say goodbye, Dwayne, let's address a situation. A lot of listeners have been waiting for 28 minutes for your comments on VAR.
Look, I can live with Michael Oliver's error. It was an error, but it was a very difficult call to make. So, you know, Michael Oliver actually is a decent referee, so I'm not trying to throw him under the bus with this. My issue with VAR, particularly in England, is if you're going to have it, then they want their cake and eat it too, right? Like, they want to have VAR to say they have it, but they don't actually want to overturn anything.
And they don't send the referee to the screen, which is weird also.
Yeah, so that first goal by Liverpool, which is a brilliant goal, and it would be totally unfortunate to take that off the board. But if you're going to have the rule in place, then it should have been overturned, because that clearly was a handball. They made an error in that particular case, and that changes the game completely. That said, you know, I want to make something abundantly clear here. I am not at all suggesting that VAR took 3 points or 1 point away from City yesterday. City needed to defend better to get the win over Liverpool. Liverpool came out and played their game, which is an ability to hit teams on the break. That is City's vulnerability as well. Yeah. And you know, the first two shots went in the back of the goal. So City, if they needed to do that, regardless of what happened before. But in terms of the VAR situation, I fail to understand how it helps the game. That is my bottom line.
Yeah.
And I also have a question for anyone out there. Like, I hear all the time when they're talking about offside. Look back to that Sheffield disallowed goal against Spurs, where it was, if it was offside, and I'm not convinced it was, but if it was, it was literally a toenail. And everyone said, well, offside is offside, blah, blah, blah. How come you don't say the same thing about a handball in the box then?
That's true. Yeah, no, there's a double standard, I guess. And
yeah.
I guess if you leave even a millimeter of room for interpretation in the rule book, someone will find that gap, will find that rule, that loophole, and will exploit it. And I guess it is part of the game. But you mentioned Liverpool, the counter. To me, their second goal, the beauty of the execution, that Alexander-Arnold pass, first of all, to open up everything on the counter, and their clinical finish in the counter is quite something to see, Dwayne. I have to say, I was impressed by the second goal and the fluidity, the clinical finish of Mo Salah on that one. No, it is a very talented team that if you give him the opportunity to beat you on the counter, even if you're Manchester City, you'll get beat by them on the counter. They might be the best team in... Well, no, they are the best team in the world on the counter right now in football.
No, for sure. They might be the best team in football. There's no doubt about it. I mean, like, look, it was a weird game. And this is what I said at the end. If you look at my Twitter feed, it's like it was a weird game. And you absolutely can look at it and argue that City could have won it. I mean, they missed several point-blank chances. The VAR situation we've already talked about, but they didn't. So, you know, it is what it is at this point. So, you know, congratulations, Liverpool. It is a long season. Anyone that's claiming the title race is over is being a bit silly. I mean, they're only 8 points back on Chelsea, by the way, not on City.
I was going to say, don't forget about the Blues. The Blues
or
are here.
For that matter either. But yeah, it's, you know, I think it's theirs to lose. There's no doubt about it. Like, they lost one game last year. They don't seem like they're going to lose anything. But that said, you know, a couple injuries and things can change pretty quick. They hadn't particularly been playing that well leading into this, but it was an entertaining game. Like, there was a lot of, you know, the intensity of it, the speed of it was something. It's remarkable. I mean, not to compare, but when you watch that versus the MLS Cup, it's quite clear what their level is, right?
Well, yeah, but it's a different game almost. It's literally a different. Because you can use the skill set of the actors of this play are so that you can go to places that you can't in other place, which I guess Major League Soccer is a different type of play.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's
both are worthwhile. That's what's important to me. Both are worthwhile, but are different.
No, of course they are. It's all context, right? Like, I everyone's wishing me this morning happy birthday. Hope today is better. It's my birthday, by the way. I hope today is better than yesterday. And thanks. And my response, I'm not saying it out loud because I want to be grateful to these people wishing me this. But it's like, if there's a sports fan on earth, Kevin, that deserves to complain less about the results they've had over the past 4 or 5 years, it's you. Yeah.
All the way to seeing even England in the semifinal of the World Cup. You had a good run. The Capitals winning. Toronto.
The Raptors won the NBA title. The Raptors won a championship.
Dwayne's had a good run. Sent some down the 401.
Yeah, it's fine. I can live with a day. It's okay. I'll be okay.
Dwayne's going to be okay, and Dwayne's is going to celebrate his birthday, and we'll be back tomorrow, our last show before our yearly break. There'll be a Two Solitude Soccer podcast also tomorrow, so make sure you go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to a plethora of shows, two from the weekend, last week, great time to be a fan of Soccer Today and the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. Thanks to Dwayne, of course, for all his work over the years and continuing to bring us great coverage. Tristan, thank you for your time yesterday. And we'll be back tomorrow with more of the world of football with a soccer perspective. MLS trade windows opening. Players are going to get traded. Some players that just won yesterday might actually be traded before they arrive at the rally in Seattle tomorrow. And that is fascinating in a way. More on that tomorrow on Soccer Today. And until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.